Welcome back to Feminist Book Club, the podcast. We're not just about feminist books. We are here for social justice, literature, and media in all its forms. But we do that through an intersectional feminist lens. Thanks for being here. Let's get started. Welcome back, everyone. Renee Powers here. Today, I'm thrilled to be chatting with the authors of the brand new book, With Pleasure, Managing Trauma Triggers for More Vibrant Sex and Relationships. We've got Jamila Dawson and August McLaughlin here, the co-authors of this wonderful book. Jamila Dawson is a licensed sex and relationship therapist, writer, and educator. She runs her private psychotherapy and consulting business called Fire and Flow Therapy, while also teaching as adjunct faculty at Antioch University, Los Angeles. And August McLaughlin is a return guest to Feminist Book Club. She's a national recognized journalist and host and producer of the podcast Girl Boner Radio, a story-driven podcast where she explores sexual empowerment and pleasure with a broad range of guests. Jamila, August, I am so excited to have you here today.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
Yeah. So I'm going to start, I'm going to have you both say hello so we get a sense of your voices. And August, I'll start with you. Can you give me an overview of this new book, With Pleasure?
Oh, sure. Yeah. So this book, With Pleasure, really is created as a resource and sort of a companion for folks who are managing trauma, as so many of us are, with a real emphasis on pleasure, community. And we really want folks to embrace their feelings rather than feel like they need to resist them. And it's full of survivor stories, true stories of folks from all over the country, different ages, different, races, different sexual orientation, who all have very different experiences as far as trauma and had wonderful things to share that I think we can all learn from.
And Jamila, you come at this from a therapeutic perspective. Can you tell me a little bit about your approach to writing this book and witnessing all of these survivor stories as well?
Yeah, it was this beautiful and challenging balancing point of, I didn't want it to be so clinical that it was alienating to the average person. And I also didn't want people to think like, oh, I've now read this book and it's all figured out. I want it to be similar to August. I want this to be a conversation and a companion. And it was fun and challenging trying to figure out how to bring in the clinical piece, but also make it very human. As a clinician, it can be very easy to hide behind being a clinician. Jargon and, let me make it really objective. And this book is intimate. And so it was really lovely and fun and challenging again to how do I find language that explains a clinical concept, but also makes it, we're talking with you and we're journeying with you.
One of the things, and I think Jamila, you make this statement in the afterword, there's this conversation between the two of you, which I just absolutely love. And you talk about being students of your own work as well, that this book has, you've learned so much from reading or from writing this book and from the people and voices featured in it. August, can you talk a little bit about maybe one of the things that you've learned from in being a student of this work?
Oh, so many. And I'm still learning continually. One thing that comes to mind is the importance of community. And a lot of this book came through Jamila and I would have these conversations. We would Skype, we would Zoom, and we would kind of unpack these themes and these questions that people might Google when they're feeling very isolated in their own trauma experiences and the aftermath and all of that can bring up. And I remember hearing Jamila talking about how vital community is, almost like air, like something that is not optional. And it really made me think about my own journey as far as when I was in my darkest place with managing trauma, which I write about in the beginning of the book, I felt not only so alone, but even the process of seeking help, I did all by myself. I didn't ask anyone for help. It didn't occur to me that I could ask somebody to support me in my quest for feeling better, making sense from up and down, the relationship pieces, all of the pleasure that I was so disconnected from at the time. It just didn't occur to me. And now it's like a neon sign. It's like it's a principle that I will carry because it applies, I think, to every facet of our lives.
Is there anything you'd like to add to that, Jamila? Something that you've learned as a student of your own work?
I mean, similar, I remember those conversations about connection and community and how life-saving they are. And yet my pleasure practices, like that's, you know, given so much of what's going on in the world right now, it has absolutely been a lifeline to keep my pleasure practices. That integrity, the true integrity, meaning like what I do has to match up with what I say to my clients. And so continuing to reach for what makes me feel alive, what makes me feel back in my body. Remember, keep practicing, not as perfection, but always only as practice. That I've continued to need to do that. So that's been, and now I have the book where I can be like, what did I say?
Wow, these authors were so smart.
I'm right, like, wow, time. Like, good point. Like, I'll remember.
I love that. Jamila, this question is specifically for you because we were talking about pleasure and we're talking about trauma. And, you know, from a clinician standpoint, can those things coexist and how do we embrace them?
So I would not have written the book with August if I thought the answer was no. So the answer is absolutely yes, that these two things can coincide. And in the book, I talk about how I tripped over that realization because I was so steeped in working with trauma with my clients, because I had had my own journey around trauma. And when I looked at what seemed to be working with my clients and what seemed to have helped me in my own life, when I distilled it, it was pleasure. It was what scents make me feel just a little bit more alive, what colors, what textures, what movies, what anything that helped me cling to life and that helped my clients cling to life. And what I really love, I love paradox. I hate binaries, but I love paradox. And I wanted people and still want people to realize like these two things are not mutually exclusive. They're actually both true and both can interweave in our lives.
I love that. One of the things that we tend to say amongst our team is we contain multitudes. All of these things can be true at the same time. Exactly. We can be hurting and experiencing pleasure. Mm-hmm. August, what does pleasure mean to you?
Pleasure. I've thought about this a lot, you know, because the book started out when I first had the idea, I wanted to talk about triggers because I was fascinated. I couldn't believe how strong and intense these trigger flares were. And I got really fascinated by what was happening. Now, if I were to write a book just about triggers, that's a valuable thing, I think. However, the world doesn't know me as a trauma expert. They don't know me as a journalist who writes about trauma, although trauma does come up a lot in sexual empowerment work. And I had heard from so many listeners who were like, you know, telling me about their own traumas. And so I knew it was a valid topic, but I didn't know that that book would be the one that would take off. People really, especially I think in the publishing industry, they're trying to find out, why are you the person to do this book? So at first, pleasure was kind of an afterthought for me to put in, because I was like, okay, so it's going to be about triggers. Oh, but also, you know, like sex, pleasure, blah, blah, blah. And that to me says so much. Like, it wasn't where my mind went. Pleasure was the thing that suffered the most in my life during my dark year that I mentioned. And even as we were writing the book, there were times when we would go like, wait a minute, pleasure, like, we're writing about pleasure and we forgot to talk about pleasure, or, you know, we made this joke, we need to put on our pleasure glasses. Like, everything we do, and we were picturing these like neon flashy, like something really sparkly. And so I've through this book and through this journey have realized how important pleasure really is, and how I hadn't spent enough time thinking about it, even as like girl boner. Like sexual pleasure is incredibly valuable. but I wasn't really delving deep into what pleasure meant to me on like a broad scale in my life. And it is so profound. Just one example, I have a foot fracture right now, and I've noticed that I'm taking delight in taking care of myself. And that is tremendous growth. I look back at previous me and think, I don't know that she could have done that. And I really do think that this process with this book and working with Jamila and speaking with these survivors is one of the reasons.
That's beautiful. I'm sorry to hear about your foot.
Thank you.
One of the things that I found really profound and moving about this book is that it is immensely inclusive. And I don't mean just inclusive in terms of race, not that race and sex and gender are just, you know, they require just, but those are incredibly important. And in addition to those kind of identity factors, it's also inclusive in terms of experiences of trauma and responses to that trauma. Either of you, why was that important of these different life experiences and how your subjects, that sounds clinical, how your survivors have learned to cope and move through trauma?
I mean, I like to think of them as like our collaborators or like fellow journey folk, because I love adventure novels. I'm like, yeah, we're all going along and I've got the sword and you've got the anyway. So what's so beautiful about the process of, I think, integrating pleasure as a practice is you discover things. You cannot predict the end. You cannot predict the process. And so when we put out our call for people, these are the folks that showed up and these are the stories they had, this incredible range. I don't have the words for how much I'm just blown away by and honored by the variety of folks and their ability to flourish and keep finding a way. And so here were the people who had something to say, and August was phenomenal with interviewing them. And what we found was people were at different levels of where they were, like how many years ago or how recent their trauma was, how kind of alive it was for them or had settled a little bit or been more integrated. And again, just the sheer variety and creativity of how people had found their way through. But again, with that theme, and I think when we use pleasure as that kind of magnifying glass, that's when you start to see both the grand diversity of creativity, but also like what all of them did, whether they knew it or not, was weaving in life-affirming practices of pleasure, coming back, fighting, dancing, fucking, like family ways of like coming together, conversational ways of coming together. But just, again, that multitude in all encapsulated in these practices of pleasure.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. There's this idea when you think about trauma and survivors, and especially sexual assault, a lot of people think of a young cisgender woman as the person who is managing that trauma. And certainly there are many, many, many of those stories. However, there are just as many of people in their 60s, of cisgender men, of trans folks, of like, I mean, this is not a limited audience who experiences this, or I should say a limited population. Unfortunately, and at the same time, fortunately, the breadth of experiences and their willingness to share, as Jamila pointed out, is such an incredible gift, because I feel like we can all see ourselves in these stories somehow. Yeah. And as someone who was interviewing, one of the really painful things for me, I will say, and challenging, but also eye-opening and important, was how it felt to talk to cisgender men about their sexual trauma. I am not used to hearing about that. And it showed me how commonplace and almost casual we can be in some ways, talking about it, because it's both way too common and also quote unquote normalized for women and for feminine identifying folks to speak about these things. And it showed, I mean, the pain is just as deep for all of these experiences, but you become a little bit sobered you know, by hearing so much of it from only certain people. And so I have just a really special place in my heart for the folks who told their stories, knowing that usually they are not allowed to. They were so brave, and their stories are just vitally important.
Again, we tend to think about trauma as these kind of acute situations of like the molestation or the rape or the accident or whatever. We don't often talk about, although we're starting to see it more and more, these larger issues of systemic trauma, of like what racism does, what transphobia does, and how that is a compounding chronic trauma on people. And you can't fix that. You would like, oh, we'll just give you a little bit of therapy and you're going to be fine. No, you're going to be sent back out to this world that is sick and that literally wants you dead, one way or the other. And so it was really important to both of us to weave in those stories as well. And that's like, again, these pleasure practices are hopefully, how do we help you stay replenished and stay alive in an unfriendly environment, and help you find ways where you can create many environments within this larger environment that help you feel rejuvenated and restored and safe enough before you have to go out again.
Do either of you follow Ijeoma Oluo?
She's the author.
Okay. So she did. She's
phenomenal.
She shared on her Instagram stories about a week ago something that really struck me. She said that, you know, the last year with the pandemic, we've all been, and Black Lives Matter, we've all been thinking about how do we get, like, once this part is over, then I will, you know, rejuvenate or take time to myself or, you know, spend some time healing. And there were some really terrible things that happened to her in particular recently, a white woman profiting off of her work, where she said, you know, these things keep happening. And the lie I've told myself is that sometime at one point these will stop happening, and they won't. So how do we take moments to heal as much as we can, like you said, Jamila, within these systems that are oppressing us, that are literally trying to kill us? How do we take that moment? What can we do in order to fill up our cup before, you know, it happens again, inevitably?
Right. I mean, I think, like, one, there's something very, very powerful in understanding what the game of play is, like, what is even happening? And that's part of trauma too, is we don't understand what occurred. And so we just kind of put it away, or need to put it away, the body puts it away. And so when we can put a name on it of like, oh no, this is racism, or this is sexism, or this is transphobia, and this is going to happen again, then the body, really, we can start generating some resilience and some creativity. But it does mean getting really clear about, right, this is going to happen again. And so how do I prepare, not in a defensive and rigid place, but in a really thoughtful, mindful, I'm going to flow, like, I will continue to flow. Sometimes I visualize myself as water, and like, and this is, that's that boulder, but I'm water. And I'm just going to, like, yes, I'll be impacted, but in my life, I'm going to keep my pleasure practices. I'm going to keep cultivating community. This is how I'm going to keep going. So, and I adore Ijeoma, and I hope that she keeps finding ways to move forward, because it's going to keep coming, and we need her.
and we need her words so badly.
We really do.
One of the things I really appreciated about the book as well is you take to task the dark side of self-help. And I was kind of laughing. I was looking at the back of the book, and it is categorized as self-help. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. Yeah. I mean, it's also categorized as social science and psychology and all of these things. But one of the categories is self-help. So I would love to hear how this book, how With Pleasure, is different than some of the self-help ideologies that you take to task in the book as well.
Oh, yeah. Gosh, I remember having a conversation with our editor, Kara Rota. She's wonderful, from Chicago Review Press. And we were talking about how we both are very uncomfortable with the self-help genre. And we believe that helping the self is positive. However, we have both seen in so many different ways the damage that is done by these, especially folks who are kind of self-proclaimed gurus or I have the answer. It kind of becomes like you're helping them by buying all their stuff to help yourself, maybe, but don't help yourself too much because you got to buy their next thing. And that is the milder case. I feel myself like trembling with a little rage. Because, you know, and for me, a lot of my introduction to the ideas in self-help were in my very disordered time with diet. I know I've talked to you before, Renee, about my eating disorder history, working in fashion, in modeling. And so I've seen it since, as so many of us do, like, you know, my teens, we start getting these messages. And when you're genuinely trying to help yourself, especially when you're feeling vulnerable, and especially when you're managing trauma, it feels like they are preying on us, even if they start out with good intentions. Certainly there are self-help books and there are people who consider themselves leaders and teachers who do wonderful work that's helpful. And even some of the works that I consider pretty harmful may be really helpful to someone, but I don't think it's okay to not address trauma in these books and in these programs. And so we covered a story of a young woman who was very sadly lured into this self-help, quote unquote, group. And she ended up dying at one of these retreats. And we spoke with her mother and her sister who have started this organization to really start to address these problems. Because this was somebody, her name was Kirby, and she just wanted to live a full life. She wanted to have meaning and impact. And so it was really important for us from the get-go to not present ourselves as gurus, as Jamila was saying, like, this is a team of folks and you are part of it. Like, you, reader, are part of this. We don't know more than you do about yourself. You know yourself. And we wanted to give people tools so that when they are navigating this journey, and, you know, a lot of folks who don't have access to insurance, who don't have any family support, who've been ostracized by communities, they're going to go for what they can find online. And we want folks to be able to search in ways that keep them safe. It's just, it's so important to us.
Both of us had a lot of words about our rage. And it's really when femme folks can talk about rage and anger, it's even that is profoundly healing and profoundly revolutionary. Like, I am enraged of, again, taking advantage of people's desire to blossom, to be better, to have, again, as Aga said, like, meaning and impact. That is so incredibly profound and precious. And for it to be exploited, I don't really have words for the people who participate in that. And so, and by participate, meaning the people who start these kinds of organizations. And so we really wanted people to know there are ways to discern, which is part of like trauma recovery work, to discern somebody who is healthy and who is really wanting to support you in your growth, even if that means the end of a relationship or the end of a particular business connection or anything. But people who want to support your growth and shifting versus people who want to keep you tied to them in some way, buying the next thing, participating in the next thing. I know the answer. I'm not going to be asking you questions. I'm going to be telling you what the thing is. Those are the kinds of behaviors you want to stay away from. Woo, so many feelings about that. So that chapter was very hard to write and so important. Like, I'm thrilled beyond belief that is in there.
Yeah, I think the reason why it was so profound to me and why I wanted to bring it up and what I want our audience to kind of take away from this is that chapter about how destructive self-help and kind of the guru culture can be, there is a part of it that can be good for us. And you're demonstrating what it means to have a holistic approach, how to work within systems of oppression, how to be collaborative, how to distribute power that's non-hierarchical. I mean, it's a truly intersectional feminist approach to self-help. And we don't have a whole lot. Seeing someone who loves the personal development genre and is also a feminist, like, there are not a whole lot of books out there that nope. do it right.
It's not about green juice, everyone. Like, it's
exactly.
Not,
exactly.
I mean, enjoy your green juice. And
right. sure. Right. And sure. And also, let's take down systems of capitalism. Let's, you know, let's be right. radical. Let's be anarchist, and we can still do good. And so right. that's I want to uplift this book as an example of how to do this work.
Thank you.
No, thank you. And another one of the things that contributes to my just like love affair was the afterword and this conversation between the two of you. I thought it was, you know, pulling back the curtain of the writing process. And there's a really important conversation about race and collaboration. If you're comfortable, Jamila, I don't want to put you on the spot, but you were very hesitant to work with August. And if are comfortable talking about that, I would love to hear more.
I was very hesitant. And to be very honest, I still, because of how race works out in this country, and particularly how the ongoing tension between white women and Black women, and how that plays out in so many different ways, there is absolutely still a trauma response that I have still continued to experience through our writing process. This has been a very, I wouldn't say it was not traumatizing, but it definitely, I've had triggers. I've been flared in this process with August. And I've also been right up against that kind of like healing piece, which is, I think it's okay. I think I can believe it's okay. Is that safe? I don't know. And to then breathe and continue in this process with August. So I am still in practice. Around, am I taking care of myself? How possible is it to have deep relationships given the history of this country? And to when in the early part, when August 1st asked me to be part of this, I had just come off a very messed up relationship with another sex educator, a white woman who had been absolutely racist. And then I want to say it was like a week or two later that here comes this very, very friendly email of like, oh, I'd love to, like, are you interested in doing this project together? And my first thought was absolutely not. Absolutely not. I don't know you. Like, we did like a podcast that was great. Thank you very much. Goodbye. And so I had to cuddle with my cats and really, and I remembered, and this is trauma work, right? Of this is how I'm feeling, but what have I experienced with this person before? And I remembered that I had really enjoyed the experience with August, that it was organized, it was thoughtful, it was flexible without being messy. And so after cuddling with cats, I was like, well, let me have a conversation. And again, how does that go? I can slow down and see how I feel. And I told August where I was, and like a really awesome person, she not just tolerated that, but was like, I can make space for that. What do you need? And it was just this beautiful, slowed down, truly relational process. And I am so proud of both of us for continuing forward and staying in contact and saying uncomfortable things. No, this does not solve the historical issues between Black women and white women, but it definitely has like been restorative for me.
And at the end of it too, we have a beautiful piece of incredible work that we wouldn't have had if it was just August writing this. And I know August writing is excellent. August,
oh yeah,
I'm a huge fan of yours. And
I was like, you're such a good writer.
And yet having Jamila's voice and insight in this book, I think just leveled it up to where it couldn't have gone otherwise.
Oh, it would not be. It this book would not be. I mean, I remember sitting in the podcast studio, which is where Jamila and I met for the first time, was that podcast experience for my show. And I was just so moved, and I'd already had this book idea, but I was planning to interview, you know, like I do, like a lot of different folks and a lot of different experts. And just the what she brings to this topic is so invaluable. I mean, to the point that I was like, why am I writing this book? Like, this is her book.
Oh, I also had that same feeling of like, why am I writing this book? Oh, I should just write.
Oh my gosh. That cracks me up because I had that thought so many times. I was like, what am I doing here? And then I kind of had to like coach myself into like just seeing it more objectively and going, wait, do I have skills I can bring as well? Like, Jamila is very busy with her practice. I'm accustomed to interviewing people. Like, is there this synergy we could have? And that she agreed to not only be the trauma expert. And I know that that's not the stance that she's taking in this book is like, I am expert. There was no need and no room for another person to be like this had, this just felt like it had to be with her. And so when I was like waiting for her to reply to me, I was, first of all, I'm like, oh my gosh, what must she think of me? Like, she just met me. First, I asked her to write the foreword. At first I was like, I'm going to interview her. And then I'm like, maybe she'll write the foreword. And then I'm like waiting and I'm like, okay, get over it. If she says no, it's fine. But I just couldn't imagine it without her immediately. I mean, it was such a strong feeling and I knew it was a huge ask. I did not know how huge until we had that conversation that Jamila mm-hmm. just mentioned. Mm-hmm. And it was so moving and profound to me that she wanted to, you know, here's where I am. The openness that she was willing to share about something so vulnerable and so fresh, and that she was willing to trust me while also knowing that she didn't know if she could trust me. I mean, it was just this, the trust piece is something I hold so dear and it's so sacred. But yeah, this book would just not be, I can't imagine like a paragraph of it without Jamila's touch.
Okay. It was such a fun, challenging journey, making space for like each of our neurodivergence and how we could complement each other and how to protect each other of like, oh, this is the pieces where I tend to struggle or how I'm feeling. And it was to have that sense of protection, not in, again, of like, we're going to mutually collapse, but of like, literally of two people of like, we're on this journey and how are we going to support and connect and protect each other so that we can keep moving forward was, there's nothing like it.
I have written down several things, Jamila, that you've said in those moments where I needed help. I mean, I remember several times where I just all of a sudden I had to talk about something really vulnerable and I couldn't, all of a sudden I was like not breathing and you mm-hmm. were like, okay, let's breathe. And I, several times I've written down, because this was through the pandemic, this was through many murders. Like there were so many, the racial outcry, there were so many things happening right. in our personal lives, in the world. And I mean, we were supposed to raise a glass together at a brunch the week before lockdown started. And so everything just changed as it did for, you know, everybody. But particularly this topic through that was just wild. But I may not get the words of this exactly right, but there was one point where I was sharing something about some of my needs for if we were to do some in-person events. And this deals with my neurodivergence. And it's something I'm not used to people being really understanding or open and receptive about. And so I was talking and I was sweating and I was sharing these things of how quote unquote weird I am is the tape that's playing in my mind. And Jamila said to me, I said, I feel so high maintenance. And she said, I don't see someone who's high maintenance. I see a lilac that knows what it needs. And I put that, it's on my desktop. Just those moments that you have where we are working as this team of learning and growing and moving through this together was like its own journey in tandem yeah. with the book.
I think Jamila, you write that to be brave is to have fear and action occur at the same time. And it sounds like that's exactly what the experience of this book was as well.
Did we write that?
That's in there.
You wrote
like,
that.
That's one of those sentences where it's like, oh my God, that, I was like, yeah.
Yes, you totally 100% wrote that.
It's a really nice feeling where you're like, I am impressed by whoever that was. That's me.
Yes. Yes.
It's like, I'm like, yes, I do agree with whoever's. But that's definitely been my experience, and certainly how my, given how I was raised and kind of how I've had to navigate my career, you know, and given how we, what we see about what bravery looks like and what courage looks like, it's, you know, all resolute and here we go and are, and, you know, spot on all this. And, you know, a lot of time just, I am afraid. I'm afraid to go forward and I'm afraid to stay here. So I better just move forward. Do something, think of something different. Like, what, again, what is a pleasure practice that moves me into that next second? But yeah, no, fear and action. Like, I'm afraid.
Do it anyways.
Right. Deadlines will do that to you as well. Like, once we had the contract, I was just like, crap.
Like, like, we have to do this?
It's like, so, I feel like so many authors must relate to this. I don't know. But for me, it's like, you're so excited about the idea and so passionate. And then when it's down and you're like, you signed a contract and you have to write it. Oh my God. It's terrifying.
Totally.
It's terrifying. And having someone else to work with, which I had never co-written before, was an incredible experience, because you have to be working to support the other person. And that can keep you going when you feel like you can't get up. And that's mm-hmm. a powerful, powerful thing.
Yeah.
Well, y'all, it's here. It's in the world now. Your book baby that you've had right. together. It's
our thought baby. It's so great. We're so proud.
I know. It feels surreal, right? I mean, just
it really does.
Even when we finished the first draft, we were like, did we write a book?
Right, because that was in the heart of things. But yeah. just the what we're hoping to, like, the title, because we had gone back and forth around the what is a title and how do we do this, and, you know, and people know there's a story of how the title changed. But yeah, it became this mantra for us that we each held and then reminded the other. And so what I'm really hoping is that it again brings that, like, that pleasure sense into other people's lives.
Well, it has been a pleasure spending the last half hour with you both. This has been so affirming and life filling for me. And this book has been such a joy to read, even in the tough parts. It was really beautiful, beautiful experience. Where can we find you both on the internet if we want to see what you're up to? Jamila, I'll have you go first.
Yeah, I'm. People can find me on Facebook, because I'm still on there, just at Jamila Dawson, or they can find me on Instagram. Again, at Jamila Dawson.
And August?
You can find me at girlboner.org or search for Girl Boner Radio wherever you listen to podcasts.
We will leave links to all of those things, including where to pick up your copy of With Pleasure, Managing Trauma Triggers for More Vibrant Sex and Relationships, out now from Chicago Review Press, which is one of my favorite indie presses, by the way. I just think that they do great stuff.
That's great to hear.
Yeah, that's so great to hear.
Thank you both so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Renee.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of Feminist Book Club, the podcast. Want to be part of the club? Here's how you can join us. Obviously, subscribe to our podcast and leave a rating and review for brownie points. Follow along on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, and TikTok. All of those links are in the show notes. Sign up for our newsletter to be the first to know what our next monthly book pick is. And check out our award-winning monthly book subscription service. Oprah Magazine named it one of their favorite book boxes, and Shonda Rhimes called us one of her favorite subscription boxes in general. There are multiple membership levels for any budget, and it's an excellent way to support the show and the voices you heard today. See you in the club.
A well-read woman is a dangerous creature.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller. find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.